Welcome, everybody, to another episode of the Rifle and Tunt Podcast. I am one of your co-hosts, Kyle Makrowski, and with me, as always, is John. John, go ahead and say hello.
Hello, listeners. Welcome back.
Welcome back. Here at Rifle and Tunt, we do our best to help people become better people, better teammates, better leaders. And with us today for this conversation is someone I've known for a long, long time. He's roped me into many volunteer activities. I sat on committees with him. I sat on a board with them, and just a pleasure to work with them. And I've been able to learn so much from this guy, and he's become a great friend over the years. Howie Ferguson from Co has joined us today. Howie, why don't you go and say hello?
Hello, listeners. Great to be here, Kyle and John. Thanks for having me.
Thanks for being here. Hey, just you know, I stumbled across COA years ago, I think in like 2008, because somebody said, have you heard of this organization? I said, no, I have no idea, and have been engaged in some way, shape, or form ever since. And so could you just do a quick shameless plug for COA? I think there's a lot of folks out there that should be a part of the organization and just really don't know it's out there.
Yeah, the old label we never really wanted, but have the best kept secret in the industry. So thanks, Kyle. Appreciate the tee up. COA stands for Construction Owners Association of America. So we are, as the name implies, a national nonprofit association founded in 1994. So we'll be 30 next year, and we're planning some anniversary stuff. Based in a suburb of Atlanta, which traces to our history. We're founded by a construction law attorney, actually, a fellow named Al Phillips, who was the rarest of all birds, an Atlanta native. You don't find too many Atlanta natives. So from there, practiced law there, had a notion back in the late 80s, working all over the country for owners, owners could sure use a community, a place to share best practices, like architects do with AIA and engineers do with all their associations and builders do with AGC, ABC. Talked it up. Everyone agreed, yeah, great idea, Al. And no one ever did anything about it. So he finally did it himself and formed COA. The really short version of the elevator pitch, Kyle, is we exist to try to help owners be better owners. Now, there's a lot you can sort of, when you start unpacking that, to that, well, what does that mean? Well, better leaders of projects, perhaps better leaders of those who manage projects. And something we've really started kind of refining in terms of message lately, because we've been doing it for a long time, we just never said it, is maybe improving the project delivery experience. You guys both know it's not easy. It ain't for sissies, as they say, delivering projects, regardless of size or type. Maybe we can help folks do it better and maybe have a slightly better experience. So that's who COA is. We have about 3,600 members, most of whom are owner organizations, but architects, engineers, and others are also members. That's us.
That's fantastic. And for those of you listening who aren't in the construction space, when we use the term owners, what we're talking about, there's a bunch of entities out there. If you think of colleges and municipalities and you think of hospitals and such, they're always building something. Either renovating or replacing or adding on or building brand new. And so these folks, they spend millions of dollars of money, millions of dollars every single year to continue to do those things. And so that's what we consider an owner. They bring money to the table. And often what they do is they say, I'm going to hire a contractor. I'm going to hire an architect. I'm going to give them millions of dollars and say, go do my project and don't screw it up. And often, it's as Howie said, it's a very complex, long process, which, that's part of the reason we're here, is because all of us, you started on the owner's side, or you spent many, many years on the owner's side working for a university, right?
Yeah, actually, first working for the U.S. Navy, I was a commissioned officer in what the Navy calls the Civil Engineer Corps, which isn't just comprised of civil engineers. I happen to be one, but it's essentially the commissioned officers who concern themselves with building, operating, maintaining facilities, both for the Navy and Marine Corps all over the world. So I did construction related stuff. I did public works kind of, or physical plant kind of, you know, O&M stuff, and also deployed with the Navy Seabees, which are their deployable construction units. So did that for about 10 years. So essentially I was an owner in that role. And then, yeah, I went to go work for my alma mater, University of Florida, down in Gainesville, and ended up being there for about 19 years, which is where I, a few years before UCOB, but not that many, where I've kind of fell into and discovered COA, because we have a chapter down there in Florida. But yeah, my bad. I just kind of skipped right over what the heck an owner is. But yeah, we're in a. Oh yeah, there's that. No, but it's a great point. And yeah, it's interesting too, Kyle, because what you just said about my background brings up something interesting when you think about owners. The vast majority of folks who work for an owner, so folks who are managing projects or managing those who manage projects. I mean, I don't have stats, but I would guess 85 or 90, maybe higher percent of those are folks who came from the industry, either as a design professional like John or a contractor. I think that might be your background, Kyle, if I remember right. Most don't come right out of school. In fact, most kids in college don't even know what is an owner. That's actually a conversation we're starting to have with some of our chapters about reaching down to the collegiate level, maybe even lower. And explaining, hey, there's this thing out there called the owner in this project delivery process. You could make a career out of doing that. And you get some college kids who are like, wow, really? I never thought about that. So maybe that's something. Anyway, point is, it's kind of the often not understood or forgotten third leg of the stool. But again, back to Al Phillips, that's why he founded COA. He's like, hey, wait a minute. There are projects. We're the ones paying the bills. We should probably, you know, have a seat at the big kids table when the industry is talking about stuff. That's kind of part of why COA got started.
It's so true that it was a void, and it has created. I've been to so many of the COA events, and helped create some of them, and part of the board, and they're just. And I tell everybody, even to this day, if you are managing projects as an owner entity, then you need to go to this thing, because you will be at a conference surrounded by people who do what you do. And they understand your world. They understand your pains. They understand your challenges. They also understand your wins. And you can learn a lot about how to do certain things. And it's no surprise. Everyone's trying to solve a lot of the same problems. We all got challenging projects. We got challenging people. We got challenging clients. We got challenging deadlines, limitations on money. I mean, this could describe that list can describe any project in any industry anywhere. It doesn't matter. And so how, you know, for a long time, owners are trying to solve those issues internally, or entities or organizations or even teams are trying to solve that in silos. You know, we're just, this must be our problem. Everyone else seems to have it figured out. Well, it turns out not really. You know, a lot of people have a lot of good things going. And the more we can share that with each other, the more we can raise the entire industry. And that's kind of leading us to where we're heading today and what we want to talk about. And that's been the, we all three of us have seen this growth and emergence of interest. I don't even know how to describe it. We've called it all kinds of different things. You call it soft skills, you call it leadership skills, you call it management skills, call it human skills. But this growth and emergence of, oh yeah, we should pay attention to the people side of our business. That might help.
Slightly important in delivering projects. Yeah, 100%, Kyle. And that's why my organization and yours, although you're kind of a foot in both, that's why Ripple and COA are good partners in crime, so to speak. I kind of like to think that COA was beginning to talk about and understand, and by COA, I mean our members, not the organization really, about these sorts of topics 15 years ago, before it was cool. Maybe in little bits and little pieces, and maybe at first, back when you and I were both on the committee that plans our national conferences, there might have even been, what? We're going to have a session about soft skills? What the hell is going on around here? You know, because we were more technically oriented. But slowly over time, that began to become a bigger part of the content that we were concerned with. And it ties, Kyle, right into another shameless plug. Kind of our whole thing is not so much the deep dive on technical skills. We kind of figure that most owner PMs, owners in general, have that already or are getting that elsewhere. And particularly, I mean, you're a healthcare owner. Great example. I tell people, look, if you're looking for the really deep dive on best practices for med gas design in a clinic assembly, you know, in the Northeast, like that's not our thing, right? You're going to get that somewhere else. But if you want to talk about the common threads that exist on every project, small, large, public, private, you know, north, south, east, west, healthcare, airport, Chick-fil-A, that's the kind of stuff we talk about. Contractual things, relationship things, team building, soft skills. And that's why Ripple and COA, I think, have kind of, we have our Venn diagram. We have intersected greatly in this area that, yeah, our industry kind of finally woke up and said, yeah, all the technical stuff matters and yay, technology and BIM and prefab. And all, but we, the 20 of us in this room who are going to pull this project off for the next 3 years, it might help if we got along and could communicate. Yeah, we kind of finally woke up to that.
I remember one of the very first projects I ever did on the owner's side when I transitioned to the owner's side. I was advocating strong for spending some time building the team. And one of our internal folks in the academic medical center, I'll never forget her comment. She was, "Why do we need to waste time doing that? These people are all professionals. They know how to design and build a building." And it was very matter of fact. It wasn't even cynical. It was more of, this makes no sense to me. I don't understand why you would have to do this. And I know you guys both have run across people just like that along the way. That's not a unique person. That's a pretty, I say common. I think for a long time in our worlds, that was a very consistent viewpoint.
Well, right. I mean, that like from a base level, sure, that's real, right? Where you're as an owner, and I've never had the pleasure of being on the owner side, but
oh, you're missing all kinds of stuff, man.
Well, you know what? You often think, right? As a design professional, I'm like, man, you guys have it pretty good, right? We're out here slaving away, battling with the contractors all the time, yeah. Right? And it's like, oh, it's such a brutal pressure cooker, and you're just sitting up there on top of the heat, like, you know, just saying, gosh, would you guys just get along? We hired you all as professionals. Just do the work, right? And then, of course, I will say, right, the more I'm kind of thoughtful about the humans that show up to get all the work done. And then you both brought me to a COA event in Las Vegas a couple years ago. And being partly a fly on the wall, right, and letting you have to like let the whole business development side go away, right? I'm not there to sell. I'm actually there to listen. And as soon as I start paying attention and hearing the pain points from the owners in the room, I was like, oh, yeah, that job's not as easy as it looks. you guys actually aren't on the top of the pile. It's just from my view, I'm farther downstream.
Right.
We're often in the middle of the pile, wouldn't she say?
Yeah. John, I was laughing out loud, and you could see me visually, in part because, of course, what you're saying is true. Like Kyle said, a lot of the good funny stuff is because it's true. But I was also thinking about my very smart alecky late 20s nephew, who once he understood, this is back when I still worked at the University of Florida, he's like, okay, now I understand what you, okay, how hard of a job is that? Well, you just say, put the building there and you're done. That's your job. But yeah, that's pretty much it. You pretty much captured it.
Yeah, right. You just make sure that the finance people sign the checks, right, after we submit our invoices. I'm pretty sure that's what the job is for you guys, right?
Well, and John, just to take what your eye-opening, your, you know, awakening, if you will, not just because of the co-event, but just to go, wow, there's more to that, and tying it back to the whole soft skills, human skill. Here's a great example of what folks in your role or a contractor may not know that Kyle and I know because we've been there. And Kyle's still living it today, is that we represent the entity we work for. We aren't actually the owner. It's not really our money. We're just representing. And typically, it would be beautiful if I could just make all the decisions. We would have no delays. I would make every decision. Everything would be great. I'm even, for an engineer, not bad when it comes to colors and that kind of stuff. But no, it doesn't really work that way. It turns out that there's a whole cadre of people that I'm representing whose input and opinions, like it or not, have to be factored in. That's where the human skills really starts coming in if you're the owner rep. You better understand, especially in a healthcare, higher ed, and there's other, but like where everybody else who you're probably actually working for, the internal client that you're doing this project for, some of whom may think that they know more than you about the industry, even though they don't. They don't have a clue what an RFI is or how, but you better learn how to keep them in the room and yes, your opinion matters. Maybe even convince them that this idea that's yours was really theirs. Now you're getting to the why soft skills matter and why it's different on the owner's side, because you're cat herding. You're trying to bring people together, reach consensus, and maybe even have people smile and be proud.
Yeah, if I were to visualize it, I've learned that the owner's rep is kind of like the pinch point in an hourglass. Right. And so you've got, it's not just sand flowing one way, it's actually flowing both ways. And you're trying to navigate all that at the same time with lots of pressures all the way around. So again, like with the fact that working in construction and project delivery is a pressure cooker, there's so much cat herding that's happening. There is the pressure of dollars and schedule, time, all these things come into play. And, you know, most of us as professionals understand conceptually how to get things done. But what, as we've started talking about, what we feel like there's a gap in is recognizing that they're all humans coming to the table to get the work done, regardless of whatever technology we add. And so here we are, hello, human skills, right? How do we bring in the fact we recognize that they're humans who are all getting this done? We all have, if we can learn how to modulate how we communicate best for the people around us and allow the human side of those around us to show up, then we can actually get through these challenging efforts in a way where we all, it's not just about survival, right? It's not our personal survival, but we can actually take care of each other, make sure we're all in a better place at the end of the project. And we're, you know, actually learn how to care for each other along the way. And so it can become a much more positive experience for everyone.
You think that there was something that triggered an interest in this, or has it just been a slow build as it's grown? I don't know, over the last 15 years or so. I would say that 15 years ago, there probably was, we could all safely say it was pretty much no interest in anything like this. Let's just get it done.
Right.
And then over time, we've seen this as it's felt like a slow creep where more and more entities, more and more companies, more and more groups of people have started to say there might be something to this whole let's invest in people, soft skills kind of thing, with intention, to where now it's certainly not mainstream. I don't want to say that by any means, but there's definitely a push to try to do it more than I think there ever has been. Do you think there's any point in time that caused that to happen?
That's a tough one, Kyle. This is like PhD level stuff, but it's a fantastic question. My top of my head, and just for the audience, there was no prep on this. It's not like we were talking about this through email 2 weeks ago. It's right out of the chute fresh, and which is actually makes for the best conversation. I think, Kyle, that the answer is no. There wasn't a tipping point event until 2020. So pre-COVID, I think it was just a slow build, and maybe a little bit, no offense to the boomers and folks I learned under, but as more of those folks started retiring, again, this is being a little overly generalizing, but you probably had a lot more folks of that era who would be like, whatever, man, rub some dirt on it. Forget relation. The lady you were talking about, right? Just rub some dirt, get the job done. Who cares? Relationship. Just design, build, write the check, you're done. Those folks, as they started retiring, some of that cynicism, maybe that started leaving. I think folks in our greater world, like Brené Brown would be one for me. People might be shocked, like this guy, ex-military, why he's a Brené Brown fan? Oh, absolutely. Those sorts of people, I think, sort of penetrating more of our society and becoming more respected and prevalent, and thoughts that, you know, talking about all of Brené's stuff. And then you hit 2020, and of course the whole world changed, and I think it really got driven home from that. So I think there's pre-2020, post-2020, before 20, it was a slow build, various things happening. And then 2020, it really got amped up, and people were like, damn, we got to do this through code. Yeah, we better have a solid relationship now. I can't even talk to you. Even if I'm face-to-face, I can't really see you because you have a mask on. That's my top-ahead theory.
Yeah, I'm with you. I don't think there was a catalyst. And even I mean, as you look across society today, based on the learnings from COVID, where we did a lot of the virtual stuff and we still do a lot of virtual stuff, and people were a lot more patient my kids interrupted me, or my cat interrupted me, or we spent a little more time chit chatting and laughing and stuff. A lot of that is gone again. Because it was cute during COVID, but now we got work to do. So now here we are back to the busyness. And so we've work-wise, I think we've lost sight of some of the benefits that came with suddenly being thrown out of our comfort zones. But that hasn't necessarily increased or decreased the interest in soft skills, whatever we're calling it, human skills, you know, how to be a better person in working on teams. And it helped, but it helped the progression, I think, that started before COVID. I think you're right. I think it brought a lot of it to light. Now we're kind of back in the dark, but it continues to march forward. There's a lot of firms that are trying to do stuff internal to help better their people. There's a lot of projects that show up that are saying we're going to bring someone in to help gel the team. Not as many, of course. We want every project to do that, but it's still a long road, I think. We've got a long way to go.
Sorry to interrupt, but you and John are too modest and humble to say it, so I'll say it for you. Look at Ripple Intent. I mean, it's basically blowing up. I don't know what your schedule. I haven't seen your actual schedule, but the breakfast, and I think it was just, you know, kind of Portland, Denver, Arizona. It's everywhere now. That's not a mistake. That's not a coincidence. That's not weird. That's people absolutely being drawn to, I want to talk about the kind of stuff we're talking about, a better workplace, you know, people matter, communication, all this kind of stuff. There you go. I mean, it's not just because people love Kyle and John. They do. But it's also talking about this stuff, especially in our industry, that 20 years ago, again, you would have been, you know, shamed out of the room. What? That's why you guys are blowing up, because people have a yearning to do this better and to talk about it.
Well, I appreciate that. There were a couple of pioneers that I remember early on in my career that I stumbled across. You know, Brené, of course, was one. I remember Brent Darnell coming to a couple of co-events, and he talked about early on how if you focus on taking care of the subcontractors, that surprisingly, you're going to be more profitable overall. And coming from actually before GC, I was a sub for a while, and I listened to that guy and went, my goodness, this guy gets it. And he was early, and he's still out there, which is fantastic. And there were a few others like that came along that said, if you put time and effort into developing yourself and your team, the payoff is huge. But you're absolutely right. The pressure to skip that still exists today. There's an expectation that if I'm hiring a team, they will know what to do to, like you said, put the building over there and you're done. And it is fascinating to watch. Now, I've also seen folks who have tried to go too far down the process path with the human skills piece. All you got to do is make a list, make a few check boxes, put stuff on the calendar. And I've seen this many, many times. Let's check in as a team. How are we doing? Everyone's good. All right, cool. Back to work. And it's like, no, that's not what we're talking about. That's helpful. It's a step, but it's one of a thousand steps. You're not going to get somewhere by processizing people. It's like I've joked, if you come to work for us, depending on which project manager you get, you're going to get a slightly different experience, because we have yet to figure out how to standardize personalities. Now, we don't try, but point being is they're people, and they're individual people, and they approach the same processes through their own personal lens. And they should be allowed to do that as long as they acknowledge that they do that. And they're not, of course, accosted or threatened or challenged because, hey, you're not following the process. You are, but you're still a human being. So there's a blend, and that takes a certain amount of effort and skill and finesse to make that work and work well.
Yeah. Kind of another thought too. I don't know if this is going off the rail. I don't think so. But thinking about our membership, which for the listeners' info, you guys I think know this, but we have we welcome all owners. We aren't just healthcare. We aren't just higher ed. We have a lot of higher ed, a lot of healthcare, a lot of government, but all kinds of ours. But we are predominantly, not by design, public owners, and many of those public versus corporate. So governmental kind of entities or pseudo-governmental entities. And a lot of the folks, again, this is a little bit generalizing, but I'm in the ballpark of right because I came from this world. I came from the federal and then the state government, university, higher ed. A lot of public owners have this phobia because they took some classes internally or they read the manual and it says, you know, you can't accept gifts from contractors. You can't do this. You can't do that. Of course you can't. That's bad. But they take it too far and think that that means you can't have a relationship with your contractor or designer. This is in the realm of what we're talking about here, team building and soft skills. And yes, of course you have that relationship. If John is an engineer on one of my projects, we better have a good relationship. We better get along. He better know he can trust me. And likewise, that doesn't mean he's going to take me on a junket or buy me lavish gifts. But again, the public owner, sometimes there's this, oh, I can't, relationship, what are you talking about? No, man, that doesn't equate to breaking the law. It means, can you trust this person? Can they believe you when you tell them, we'll cut you a no-cost change order, just get whatever. That's the kind of relationship we're talking about. I think some public owners misinterpret that then think, oh, God, I can't do that. Does that make sense? No.
Yeah, we've talked about this before, the whole procurement world having this giant wall up between, and they advocate nationally from the folks who have the national organization around procurement that you cannot talk to people and you cannot have interactions during the procurement and your debrief has to be very structured and very, and you're right, the word relationship can be taken so many different ways. And there's a difference between understanding who you are and how you're wired and how you see the world and your natural reactions to things and how you approach problems, and then understanding those things about the people around you. That's a very, very specific type of relationship. That's a very healthy working relationship that allows you all to succeed and be in a better spot to deliver whatever it is you're being asked to deliver. So absolutely, the word relationship or team building, the old trust falls, which are some pretty darn funny videos if you look up trust fall on YouTube. That is not what we're talking about. Those can become elements of it. But really what I go back to is, no, this is about who you are, how you're wired, how you interact, being intentional about that and having that knowledge of those around you. And if everyone's in that spot, man, you talk about a high performing team. That's how you get there. So I agree with you. I think there's a lot of natural fear and resistance to, oh no, I'm prevented from getting to know people as people. Well, yes, it's one thing to know what kind of pizza you like. It's another thing to know who you are and how you work.
Right.
So man, we could probably talk about this all day.
Yeah, we could. I know we're getting close on time. I mean, one of the things that's really sitting with me and that I've learned over the past couple of years, the more I think about how we show up as people in the workplace, is that once we come to the table for a project and the design professionals, the contractors are often looking to the owner to sort of set the behavioral standard. Right. It's just following contract lines. That's what we frequently do, which in my mind puts undue pressure on the owner to set that stage. And so kind of what I love is in the COA space, right, talking with owners about how to perhaps be more human, right, when it comes to these project engagements. What I would love for our non-owner listeners to think about is we actually have a great opportunity to feel empowered to actually go to our owners and request, say, would you like to approach this project a little differently, right? What if we spent a little more time without it having to be more money, right? More time, more schedule, right? Longer durations, those kinds of things. But what if we were to come together and focus on being that high performing team where everyone is allowed to express who they are, share who they are, and let's all come together a little bit, then that's, I mean, we can take the pressure off the owners in doing so, right? It actually just kind of opens the door quite a bit. We often just don't think to open the door because we come in and I know what my pie wedge is. I'm here to do my piece and that's where I'm going to live. And that's what we're comfortable with. So this is about getting a little bit thinking long term along the lines of Brené Brown and vulnerability of how do we learn to get comfortable being a little bit uncomfortable?
Yeah. Yeah. I love what you just said, John. And yeah, there is an opportunity, but there's a fear factor. If I'm that architect, that builder, that engineer, that design build team, whatever, there's a fear factor of approaching that owner and saying that because you could get, if it's not an owner, you know, back to Kyle's friend from years ago, whatever, man, just get the project. Yeah. We did partnering 30 years ago, whatever. You'll get that kind of thing. So there's a fear factor. You don't really know. For COA, the nice position we're in, and we try to not do this in a cynical way or with a finger wagging, we know everything way, but we can kind of, since we are the organization for owners, in a hopefully kind of gentle way, kind of ask our owner members to take a look in the mirror. Before you start blaming everybody else for why your project you're going, you might want to take a look internally first. Maybe it's at yourself, your organization, your processes, your contracts. Are you really being that, what we call, John, the good owner? That is a thing. And we don't mean goody two-shoes. We mean perfect. We mean timely, fair, collaborative, transparent to the degree you can be. Sometimes you can't on certain things, but there is such a thing. Our dilemma in COA is that most of the folks who join COA already have that mindset. We're preaching to the choir. They kind of get it. We're trying to reach the owners who don't have that mindset. And I'm sure you've worked for some, John. You don't have to name names, but that's our catch-22. It's cool because, like Kyle said, you go to a COA event and you kind of feel like, hey, I've met my people. These are my people. Like mindset, people believe that there is, I can do better. Continuous improvement. Sometimes the projects go wrong because of us, because the owner. It's cool to be in the position to be able to gently say that, but we would love to be able to get some owners who don't think that way to come on in and take a sip.
Howie, before we go, how do you get a hold of COA? Where do people need to go to learn more or become a part or get engaged?
COA.org. We're on all the socials, of course, especially LinkedIn. But I think they're pretty intuitive. Doesn't take 97 clicks to get their website. You can learn all about our history and our different offerings. Both of you, of course, are involved with our Owner Training Institute, which provides in person, for the most part, in person, pretty deep dives. Again, not so much on technical stuff, more on process. You two are, and I'll make the shameless plug, are a big part of the real lighting of the Ripple Intent COA marriage candle, if you will. We are working on, for people's knowledge and info, a human skills class that will be part of that Owner Training Institute. But anyway, all that's on our website, COA.org. You can find all the staff contacts, my phone number, text me, call me. We're here, open book.
Appreciate it, Howie. Appreciate your time today. Thanks for joining us. For those of you listening, follow us on LinkedIn. Find a Ripple Intent, find John, find Kyle, find Howie, rippleintent.org as always, and hopefully we'll see you at one of our breakfast clubs down the road. As always, appreciate you listening, and we'll see you down the road. Take care.